Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Kind of feels like a summer thing going on right now outside in Milwaukee in this first full week of November. But no baseball, of course, but trying to catch up what's going on in this offseason. Very different offseason than what we're used to. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. On the other line, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter Tom Hodricourt, covering the Milwaukee Brewers year in and year out. Tom, there's not a lot going on in baseball right now because we don't have a full schedule in front of us in terms of when we might expect anything. You know, there's a real uncertainty around the schedule. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic is just accelerating. It is not getting better. Hard to imagine this season looking anything like a normal baseball season in 2021. The Brewers have made some moves, mostly letting players go. It's just so weird. Do you have any sense, scheduling-wise, when we might know things like, you know, when free agency, I guess, will sort of begin, how teams are going to handle spring training? I mean, all this stuff feels like there's so many variables out there. Do you have any sense of when baseball, the Brewers, but baseball in general, are going to have an idea of how this is going to play out?
Well, JR, I don't think we're done with the subtracting of personnel yet. There's a December 2nd deadline for tendering contracts for next year. And a lot of arbitration eligible guys are going to be either be cut loose, just cold turkey, or be asked to sign lesser deals than they might get in arbitration or get non-tendered, you know. And the Brewers started the offseason with 10 arbitration guys. One of them, Ryan Healy's already been outrighted and taken free agency. So that's a lot of arbitration, guys. And the history of arbitration is your salary goes up. You know, it does not go down. Your salary goes up. There's not a lot of teams that have the appetite for just having their payrolls go up now, not knowing what next season's going to bring as far as fan attendance and revenue. So, you know, I don't think we're past the subtracting stage yet. I think on December 2nd, a whole bunch of more free agents are going to get kicked out onto the market. And it's already a very high number. So, you know, the very crust, top crust of them, guys like JT Realmuto and people like that, Trevor Bauer, those guys will get deals. But, the so-called middle class, those guys, I'm sure, are worried. You know, there used to be this kind of unwritten rule in free agency that players wanted to get their contracts signed, their new contracts signed by before Christmas, so they would know how many presents they could buy their children. You know, but we've been getting farther and farther away from that. It's all bled into the new year. Quite considerably. But this year, I think more than ever, it's going to. And, you know, I just wonder how much us baseball writers are going to even have to write about over the winter. You know, the winter meetings have been called off. We knew they would be because you're not going to put a couple thousand people in a hotel in Texas. But that was a week that, you know, all writers always knew there would be some copy generated. Your teams might make moves, might not, but there would everybody be under the same roof. And it was just good for the business of baseball and for the publicity of baseball. Well, that's already been called off. So, who knows what this winter is going to bring? You know, and I think that's in life in general, but certainly in the baseball industry.
Yeah, we don't know. Little things like, for sure, is the designated hitter coming back? The early, early rumblings is that it actually, we might go back to the previous model where the AL and the NL have different rules, but that we don't know about that. There's a labor situation lingering over all of this that's going to impact starting the 2022 season, which I don't think anybody can even, we're even ready to dive into how that might impact what's going on right now. The Brewers, one of their roster moves was to, was not a surprise. It was to decline their side of the mutual option on Ryan Braun's contract. And I want to talk about that specifically in a second. But there was, the most recent news was changes in the coaching staff. The Brewers announcing Wednesday that a lot of people will be coming back. A lot of the coaches will be returning, but one familiar face will not. That's Ed Cedar, third base coach, at least as a base coach. He will be back in a consultant's role. Bullpen catcher Marcus Hanel, who's been there forever. He's kind of the, you know, for a while it was Bill Castro, the guy who was just with the Brewers, the mainstay year in, year out, no matter who was in charge. It's been Marcus Hanel for an eternity. He's not going to be with the team anymore. And I think both of those are losses that are going to be felt maybe not for the average Brewer fan, but behind the scenes, I know Ed Cedar caught a lot of flack online as just being that third base coach who occasionally would wave a guy home, you know, make a bad decision or seemingly a bad decision. And he'd catch a lot of heat for that. But these are two like all-time great human beings, Ed Cedar, right, and Marcus Hanel. And I think the Brewers will be worse off for not having them in a central role. But, you know, I don't know if the guys themselves wanted these changes. I don't think we know all of the story yet either. But it will be different without those two guys in the dugout.
Yeah, I think both guys knew they were heading towards the end of the line. You can't be a bullpen catcher forever. That is a physical job, you know, and Marcus had done it for 21 years. And he was always, you know, he's a big brute of a guy, so he took the wear and tear pretty good. And then Eddie Cedar, you know, been in the organization since 1992. So as you said, you know, within the Brewers' inner circle, two real mainstay men, and also like you mentioned, and we can't emphasize this enough, just tremendous people. So we'll still have Eddie around, and that'll be good. Although who knows what our access will be to anybody in spring training, if we have spring training. But Marcus will certainly be missed, and he'll continue to make a dent in Wisconsin baseball because he gives lessons at that Hitters Academy. He has the Coos for Kids charities, which gets winter coats for kids that don't have them. So he's very philanthropic, and so that we'll still hear from Marcus. You know, he's a Racine native, and Eddie lives just over the border down in Illinois, and I have no idea when opening day will be next year, if it'll be on schedule or what, but just Eddie running out of the dugout with a double-handed wave. the inside joke there is it's a tradition unlike no other.
He is like no other.
Yeah. So, but I talked to Eddie yesterday, and I don't think he saw the move coming this offseason, but I think he knew it would be coming at some point. And he's happy to be, you know, in this new role of advisor to the coaches. I think he'll still have his hand in a few things. And so we'll still get to see him, which is good. But I think a lot of this, JR, had to do with they really felt strongly about getting Quentin Berry on their staff. You know, some guys just make these impressions. And they first had him, you know, in the organization as a player. Then he was sort of a player coach at Biloxi a couple of years ago, which you don't really see that in modern day baseball much anymore. And he started liking the coaching part of it. They started seeing how good he was at it. And I think it was just they felt really strongly that it was time to get him on their staff. So now you have to find out where, you know. And so you know, the bench coach, Pat Murphy, wasn't going anywhere, and the hitting coaches and pitching coaches weren't going anywhere. So it left the base coaches, you know. And so it is interesting that we have Jason Lane and Quentin Berry. They are assigned right now as base coaches. We don't know which ones. And they said they'll figure that out. You know, neither one's done it before, so I don't know if they'll audition them during you know, exhibition games or what, but I just think they really felt strong about wanting to get Quentin Berry. And the few times I've ever dealt with him, he's a very outstanding young man. So I think, you know, sometimes it's just time to move on. Coaching staffs, you know, are always kind of fluid and volatile anyway. And, you know, with Eddie and Marcus, you just had two positions that hadn't changed literally in decades, you know. And yeah. So that, I think that's more unusual than it is usual.
And I don't know, the average fan may even know this, but their roles on the team are not restricted. You know, Marcus Hanel's more than just a bullpen catcher. He's essentially a second bullpen coach. And when you've been around that long, there's a gravitas to that. Ed Cedar as well. He works with, you know, different position groups and different fundamentals. I mean, he pitches batting practice. Like, he's not just a guy who shows up, you know, at 7 o'clock at night and then starts, you know, firing up his windmill arm. And perfect disposition for the job as a guy who can laugh at himself. He's a very funny, self-deprecating guy, easy personality, just a super easy guy to talk to. Yep. So he definitely was the right guy for that role. And Like you said, he'll be missed, but he's also not going. He's not completely disappearing, which is kind of nice. And I wonder how many other communities have a bullpen catcher as involved in the community as the Brewers bullpen catcher has been. I can't imagine another one who's had that level of impact in their home community. That's
unique, because first of all, it has to be a guy that can catch major league pitchers. You know,
right? Hard to do.
I mean, Marcus was a catcher. You know,
yeah.
And so. Yeah, I mean, those guys, especially in this age where they're all throwing 95 to 100, you
with
know,
movement,
what?
Yeah.
You better strap on the gear and be ready to go out there, you know. And plus, they use 11-9, you know, relief pitchers a game, so you're constantly out there warming somebody too. And you know, Nestor Cordor, who's going to be, it is fascinating who the, you know, they also got rid of their other bullpen catcher, Robinson Diaz.
That's right.
And so it's kind of fascinating the two guys that are replacing them, because they're very different people. One, Nestor Cordor, has been a coach in their system for a long time and manager in rookie ball. He was going to be on the Biloxi staff this year, but they had no minor leagues. But he's a former catcher. So he's definitely going to be a coach as well as a catcher, because that's his background for the last decade. He's been in the system a long time. And then Adam Weisenberger, he was a catcher in the system for many years. And then, you know, it came time to go do something else, so he went into scouting. And so it's, you know, but he's still considered a Brewer because he was in their system for like 7 years. And so it's very interesting just who they're replacing them with, too. And I think it always helps to have a Hispanic guy around.
100%.
You know, like Nestor for all the Hispanic players that are on the team. So, yeah, it's just... Just, you know, it always feels weird when longtime guys, you know, go away or get reassigned. And so that's why, I mean, Eddie and Marcus are like part of the furniture, you know. Marcus still has the, I don't know how many people are aware of this, but they're in the clubhouse in Philadelphia. And this is definitely pre-COVID, obviously. The clubhouse attendant made these delicious Philly cheesesteaks for the players and staff. And so it became a competition where they were keeping track of who could eat the most. And Marcus set a new record there in Philadelphia like 2 or 3 years ago. He ate something like 21 Philly cheesesteaks in a four-game series.
Oh my gosh.
7 a day. And you should see these things. These are Dagwood sandwiches, JR. These are not like little finger, you know, sandwiches.
Mm.
And I don't know how his digestive system even handled it. But he's a big guy and he did it. And there's like a plaque up there and he was given like this official recognition. And I don't think that record will ever be broken. So he's known in the inner circles as the Philly cheesesteak eating champion, and he also was known for his hands are monstrous, like bear hands, and he can hold like 5 baseballs in one hand, maybe 6. He's like Johnny Bench. He has these massive hands, which made him a good catcher, you know. So they always joked that he didn't even need a mitt, you know, that his hands were so big he could just catch the ball without them. So just little fun stuff like that really makes you get attached to these guys.
Yeah, I can't discount that if you've done this job for 21 years, you're an athlete. Like, he's a great athlete.
Yes.
To be doing what he's doing, and apparently has a constitution that allows him to eat a ton of Philly cheesesteaks. Oh,
and
man.
Just a true cheeser, you know, a Racine guy, and just, yep. I mean, he's a local guy, so, and he understands what the Brewers mean to the community and what can be done. And even just that role, this Coos for Kids thing is a tremendous thing. You know, it's way easier not to do stuff like that than it is to do stuff like that.
Speaking of guys who are the face of the organization to a degree, Ryan Braun's option declined. And we've spent a lot of time talking about him. And I don't know if there's really anything new to go over. I think we all agree that it'd be unlikely, possible, but unlikely that he's back with the Brewers next year. The way with COVID, it makes it even more difficult to really forecast what happens with him.
Right.
There's a buyout involved. I guess to me the question is still, will Ryan Braun play at all next year? Will he play somewhere else? How weird will it be to see him in another uniform? I really don't see a scenario where he ends up back with the Brewers, but do you look at that the same way? Like, the real curiosity is whether or not Ryan Braun's career ends here.
Well, there's two things. that are going to play tremendous parts in whether Ryan Braun ever puts on a Brewers uniform again. One is, does he want to keep playing? And he has to decide that. He has a growing family. He and his wife had another son this year. They had three young children. He has a growing family. He certainly has made lots of money. So he's financially set. And if COVID's still going on in the spring, I think that'll also become a factor. No one was that excited about COVID ball, especially the no fans part of it. So that's the first thing. There will never be a discussion between the Brewers and Ryan Braun about possibly returning until he tells them whether he wants to play some more. So, and we just talked about how slow moving this winter is going to be. So he's got plenty of time to figure that out. And then the other thing is, if there's no DH in the National League next year, I think the Brewers' appetite for bringing him back, even as a franchise icon, will be greatly decreased, because where are you going to play him? You know, he can only play 39 games out of the 60 this year. You know, he couldn't play in the very last game they played, which might have been his last game, that second playoff game in L.A. because of his back. He had back surgery several years ago, and his back's never been the same since. Anybody who's has a bad back can tell you how just getting up out of a chair hurts, much less playing baseball. You know, he did put together his usual September surge, which is just a credit to his, skills as a hitter. But he turns 37 in a few days. Let's just watch for two things, JR. Let's watch for him to declare himself, and then see if we have a DH in the National League. You know, the management and the players' union are at such odds in general these days that it's hard to get them to agree on everything. But every general manager in the National League would like to know as soon as possible if there's going to be a DH, because it involves roster construction. You know what? I guarantee you, Marcell Ozuna, let's just use him as an example, wishes they would announce today that there's a DH in the National League, because then he'll have teams from both leagues after him. You know what? And he's one of the better-looking free agents out there as far as productivity from this year. But he almost exclusively DH'd for the Braves. If anybody who's seen him play the outfield knows he's a designated hitter.
He's an adventure out there, man.
Well, how about the one, 2 years ago when he climbed the wall in St. Louis and then the ball didn't even make it to the warning track and he, tumbles down, Humpty Dumpty, he had a great fall.
Oh, the ball landed behind him, I'll never forget.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, for comedic value, that was replayed in clubhouses across the majors for weeks.
Yeah.
But it's just things like that. You know, will there be a DH? I think if you don't think Dan Vogelbach wants to hear there's a DH in the National League next year, but that involves Ryan Braun too, because he ended up DHing about half the time this year. You know, their outfield, barring injury, is pretty much set with Yelich in left, Kane in center, and Garcia in right. And if those guys do not get injured, it's not a lot of playing time to be had out there.
Yeah, and the other aspect with Lorenzo Cain is he opted out for this season. We assume at this point COVID is going to be a big part of the 2021 season in some, for at least half of it, if not the whole season. Will Lorenzo Cain want to play in the 2021 season? That's another question.
Another fact, it's no use asking him yet because we don't know yet about what's going to be going on with COVID. But right. it's something to keep an eye on, He didn't feel comfortable doing it for 2 months, so you have to wonder if he'd feel comfortable doing it for six.
Right. Yeah, and the only path I see Ryan Braun possibly coming back is, like you said, if there is a DH, and if he decides he wants to keep playing, which are two big ifs, maybe because there just isn't going to be a lot of spending for big-time free agents that maybe, on a really small deal, 37-year-old guy who could still hit the ball a little bit would be an option for the Brewers. And with the relationship they already have, maybe he would come back for that. Because right now, they declined options on a lot of guys like you would have expected the Brewers to do. Even a guy like Jed Jerko, who was one of their more productive offensive players, leaving, I think, the average fan to wonder, Who are they going to sign? Who? Because you know they're not going to go after big ticket free agents. That would be the case even if this were a normal season. But now, where it appears that the Brewers, like a lot of teams, don't have money to spend, but especially a small market franchise, you got to be really concerned with how this pandemic is affecting your finances on the field, certainly behind the scenes and everything. Who are they going to sign? Are they going to sign anybody? Like, could they go into a complete, you know, depression here trying to figure out their way through this?
No, they're going to have to sign some people because I don't think they have answers at first base on their current team unless they want to try Vogelbach out there. And I don't think that is a good long-term solution. You know, third base, you know, if finances just totally dictate it, maybe they will just let Urias have another crack at it. But you're not going to get slugging from him, which you'd like to have at third base. You know, I'm guessing at catcher, they're going to have to just give Narvaez another shot, you know, and just say the six, you know, the COVID protocols just, you know, screwed him up so bad he could never get going. He was a very curious case because he came to the Brewers with a reputation as a good hitter who can't catch, and he turned into a good catcher who couldn't hit. Very, very bizarre. Just everything was different in 2020, and he certainly was. But I, you know, catchers are so hard to find. I was just looking after JT Realmuto, who's going to definitely be out of the Brewers price range. It's just a whole bunch of 33, 34, 35 year old guys out there. And analytics are not kind to catchers at that age. So I'm guessing Narvaez is going to get another crack, you know? So I don't think they're going to make a ton of outside moves, but they got to make some.
Yeah. It's kind of fascinating to see where what this roster looks like. One piece that we know is pretty well intact. They do have a lot of guys who are capable of pitching at this point. And then one bullpen guy in particular, Devin Williams, who had a breakout 2020 season, is a finalist for Rookie of the Year. We learned that this past week. He is, I believe in just a couple days, we're going to learn who the winner is in the National League. There are a couple the guys he's going up against: Jake Cronenworth of the Padres, Alec Baum of the Philadelphia Phillies. Cronenworth was kind of the guy that was penciled in as sort of the favorite for most of the season. Though such a short season, lots can change in a short period of time. I think Alec Baum's numbers are probably better. But I really think Devin Williams has a really, really good chance with the eye-popping numbers he put up as a reliever, even, of winning this award. I don't know how you feel about it, but I have no idea which way this breaks when we find out. I think it's November 9th when they announce this award.
Next Monday, yeah. Well, as I said on a previous podcast, I had a Rookie of the Year ballot, so I got to be careful about what I say.
Yes.
I do feel bound to the rules and the BBVA of not announcing. But I will say, because I don't think this gives anything away, the three finalists were all three on my ballot. So I feel pretty daggone good about that.
You know? Nice.
I got the three guys right.
And it's hard to do because there are a lot of other options here who could have been on this ballot. Ke'Bryan Hayes from the Pittsburgh jumps to mind, but there's a lot of guys.
Well, Baseball America, which, you know, keeps track of baseball as good as anybody, they picked their Rookie of the Year as Tony Gonsolin.
There you go. Another guy who could have easily been on this list.
And then Dustin May on that staff was a rookie too. So that shows you, you know, this is, I will tell you, I agonized over my ballot, but I always do because I feel, you know, compelled to do the proper research. And this year, so I'll just speak in general about the BBWA voting this year. This is the challenge that we all had. For the first time ever, we only saw people in the same region of the country in live, you know. We only saw NL Central and AL Central players. And we don't vote for AL. I'm an NL, right? I only vote for NL. So I never got to see Cronenworth or Bohm play. So I actually made calls and talked to people who saw him. Now, I can read stats like anybody can. But I'm just talking about, I called some veteran writers in both East and West, asked them some questions. I had an MVP ballot, too. We have a small chapter in Milwaukee, so sometimes they double you up. Sometimes they assign outside guys, national writers. But I had an MVP ballot, too. And you put 10 names on that. And that was very challenging, having only seen the Central players in person. So I made several phone calls on that, too. And I do feel like I got number one right. And that's very important.
Yeah.
But it's important to line them up right too, because if it's a split vote, guys that get second and third place ballots, you know, might be able to overtake the guy that had the most first. So, but it was very challenging this year because you didn't get to use your own eyes a lot, you know. And so I'll just say it was tougher. And there was a lot of apples and oranges and other pieces of fruit to compare to each other this year.
Well, and that brings up kind of the process. I don't know if people are completely aware. When they say three finalists, that doesn't mean that there's a second vote on these three guys.
No, just those are the top three vote getters.
Right.
And a three person, the Rookie of the Year is a three person ballot. It's five names on Cy Young and 10 names on MVP. But on a three-person ballot, points are given out on a 5-3-1 basis, 5 points for first, 3 points for second, and 1 point for third. So those are the guys who accumulated the top 3 point totals, and they become your finalists. It's, you know, we probably shouldn't call them finalists. We should just call them top vote getters.
Yes.
They're the top three or point getters. So, like I said, I feel pretty daggone good that I got all three guys
past
my ballot. So at least I got that part right. People might not disagree with how I lined them up, 1, 2, 3. But all I'll tell you is I thought it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Very, very difficult this year. And I also even struggled with the concept that we're giving these awards out this year.
Right.
I just, you know, the Cy Young guy, you know, made 11 starts, whoever he is, you know.
Right. But here's why I think Dunn Williams has a chance, because you have guys like Gonsolin and Hayes and other guys who could have easily been in that group of three. It's going to be so spread out. I would bet you Devin Williams winds up getting a ton of like second and third place votes as like the one pitcher that they threw a bone to.
And that might be enough to overcome.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
The guys that are first, you know, just being on the ballot. Cause he is, you know, he's a different animal. He's a pitcher compared to position players. So,
yeah.
It's just so many things to consider, but just being in that final three, so tremendous. I mean, and he's been named NL Reliever of the Year, you know, so just a tremendous year for the kid. It's a real shame he was hurt at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, it's supposedly nothing more than a sore shoulder. He's probably already feeling good. So, they had two tremendous pitching stories, him and Corbin Burns. You know, it's too bad Corbin got hurt in that last game because he fell a third of an inning short of qualifying for the ERA title. So when the pitchers were listed there for the ERA crown, his name wasn't even on the list. And I think he was like third or fourth with a 2.11 ERA. So that might have made people forget to vote for him for Cy Young or comeback player. You know, so
yeah.
Just because he wasn't listed on the official stats, you know, he fell one third of an inning short and he had to leave that game because he got hurt.
Yeah, I think that last outing, I have no doubt in my mind what you say is true, that one more out, he's in the top three instead of DeGrom. But also, going back to your other point, it highlights how sort of silly this is to try and pick a winner after such a small sample of games, after 60 games, because it's absurd that one half inning, one out could so dramatically switch results around. But that's
yeah,
where
because
we're at.
When people were, you know, I just told you that we didn't get to see people in the other parts of the country. So when people were looking at stats to try to determine perhaps how they should rank guys, Corbin's name wouldn't have been on the ERA list. You know what? And then you might have lost track of the fact that he struck out 88 guys in 59 innings.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been fun to see him. I understand why he's not there, and it's such a weird season that it's almost irrelevant. You know, it would be a cool thing, but understandable. Since we last chatted, the Los Angeles Dodgers won the World Series. That is, of course, the team that eliminated the Brewers from the postseason. Not a huge surprise. They were the team that was favored going into the year. They've certainly spent the most, had an absolute loaded lineup. They beat the Tampa Bay Rays in 6 games. I don't know. Usually what happens in a postseason, I find, or after a World Series, is some trend. The team that wins, there'll be some trend that that they embody that gets isolated on, and teams really try to replicate it. I think you've seen it with the way bullpens are used. When the Royals won, it was about sort of speed and defense for a while there. The Dodgers, I don't know if they necessarily embody it. They do subscribe to the ideas of not working your starters deep into games, as many teams do. But then you see the Tampa Rays. I think we might see a trend based on what the Rays did, pulling Blake Snell famously early in game six and then having the bullpen ultimately cede the lead and allow the Dodgers to win the series. You know, maybe we see starters now work deeper into games as a result of this.
Well, I pushback. Think what happened in that game made some people who were on the fence about analytics, or maybe just one step over the fence towards analytics, jump back over to the other side.
Yes.
Because, and especially the damning comments by like Mookie Betts in his postgame interview. What did you think, you know, when they took their pitcher out? He just starts giggling wildly.
We didn't mind at all, he said. That's not, we're not exact words,
know,
but.
You know, I am a firm, but I think analytics are like aspirin. If you take them in the proper doses, it can really be beneficial. But if you overdose on them, it can be harmful. It's I don't think we should ever go to robotic pregame planning to the point where you don't feel comfortable deviating from it. I think that's what happened with Kevin Cash. I think that was the plan, and he didn't feel comfortable deviating. And it gets to the point where you don't believe your own eyes, you know. And so, every now and then the phrase exception to the rule, you know, I think that's a phrase that we need to remember. There should be exceptions to all rules. And if there was ever a night to make an exception on don't let your pitcher go the third time through, that would have been the night. The next three guys he was going to face were all great hitters, but he had struck them all out both times they had faced him prior to that. So, of course, if it would have worked, then he wouldn't have heard any. He would have heard very few complaints. I don't have as much trouble with taking. I don't agree that he should have taken Snell out, but I don't have as much trouble with that as I do with who he brought in.
Nick Anderson
was leaking oil badly. He had given up runs in six straight outings. So that's where robotic planning can get you in trouble. Well, he's been the guy we've gone to all year. Well, right now, and I think all those pitchers are leaking oil. Look how they had to get used so much in such a short period of time. And until the World Series, they weren't getting days off within the series either. And those guys were used a lot. So I'm sure they were tired, you know. But that should have been taken into account too, not just who you're taking out, but who you're replacing him with. So it's I just wish it would have worked only for this reason. I would have liked to have seen game seven. Who wouldn't want game seven? It would have been tremendous to have a game seven, you know, after all the COVID stuff we had to go through. But I will say that was a very entertaining series. And I'm not sure on the losing team any players are going to get more steam out of what he did than Brett Phillips did. Game four, right?
Yeah, with the walk-off win and extra, the former Brewer, of course, really popular player. I think we were all pretty excited watching that, having you know, met that guy and know how fun he is and how it's been a tough road for him as far as big league career goes. Right. Awesome to see him. And Randy Arozarena, too, who's now going to have a movie made after him. So a lot of drama.
You know what? He still qualifies for Rookie of the Year next year because he didn't have enough bats during the regular season. So who do you think is going to be the preseason pick to be Rookie of the Year in the American League next year?
Yeah. Hey, speaking of former Brewers, one last note before we go. The Gold Gloves were, inexplicably handed out on election night.
What up with that?
I have no idea. That's just baffling to me. Who doesn't see that happening and just says to themselves, you know what, let's actually wait 24 hours or 48 or 72. Like, what in the world are they doing? But one of the guys who won an award, outfielder Trent Grisham, former Brewer, who had a great year with San Diego and, of course, part of his story in Milwaukee, will be a defensive miscue in the wild card game last year. I'm happy for him only because I'm sure that weighed on him, and he absolutely bounced back in a great way in a new place, had a great season offensively and obviously defensively, and I thought that was pretty cool, a nice grace note on a big season for Trent Grisham.
And it just increased the angst of fans who didn't like that trade.
Oh, did it ever. Did it ever.
You know, so, I mean, did San Diego win the first year of that trade? Yes, overwhelmingly. No tiebreakers needed, no recount of votes. Yes, they won tremendously. But let's just see how it works out in the long run, because both Urias and Eric Lauer had COVID issues. And Urias also a ham 8 bone. Let's just see in a real season without COVID ball injuries and getting the virus itself how it works out for those guys. But can we say San Diego won the first year of the trade? Yes. But that was not a trade for 1 year.
No, that's true. And it did help the Brewers when Grisham hit that big home run against the Giants late in the last series of the season that allowed the Brewers to back into the playoffs. So there was a slight fringe benefit to it. I do think Eric Lauer and Luis Urias will be two of the bigger storylines we watch, two of the bigger sort of unknown factors as we get closer to a season. If and when there is a season, there is so much to figure out between then and now. So thanks for joining me again, Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Read everything he has at jsonline.com. Tom, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, JR.